Lunch with Leon.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Lunch with Leon. We had lots of positive reactions to our last episode, which, as you know, we created quickly as the political intrigue was at its highest. So here we are with our next episode, and this moment we're sat waiting for the outcome of the forthcoming by-election and the next chapter in British politics. So back to something else now. This is episode 122, and my guest is Jeff Cross, who is the Managing Director at Centrad. It's the leading UK telematics and CCTV business. Jeff worked his way up the ranks as a determined entrepreneur from the age of 16. It's a fascinating story. I asked him how it all started.
I think with the bus and coach industry, you just seem to fall into it, don't you? So how I got into it was, there's always a family link into the bus industry. So my great-grandfather was a bus conductor for Potteries Motor Traction. And at weekends, my nan didn't drive. So at weekends when I was with my nan, we used to go out on the bus. And I just got fascinated with it. There was a local operator that started with me, which was basically running yellow Renault Dodges, scrap motors effectively, but they were, you could see them growing, and then it was mid-90s, so you could see that all of a sudden they're investing in low floor vehicles, and I was just fascinated with how this was all sort of coming about. It just sort of took it from there, really.
Amazing. And so how long ago was that?
So that would have been sort of mid-90s, probably 1996, 1997. And then I started senior school in 1997. That's when you get the bus to school and, yeah, just start taking it from there, really. So I was always very interested in it. I was never interested from like a taking numbers type, but I was just interested in more the business element and how the whole industry worked, really. In particular, buses. Coaches sort of came a little bit later. It was very much buses that I was sort of fixated with.
Oh, no, extraordinary. So just take us through your career, because you're at Pete's Travel to start, right?
So, yeah, how it starts, so I was at school. I had a little hobby of designing, developing websites, and I did a website for a company called Pete's Travel, which was an unofficial website. And I'd have been, roughly 14 at the time. So that was the company I was sort of just fixated with that did my school, but so developed an unofficial one. And then I dropped them a message just saying, would you be interested in endorsing the website? I mean, bear in mind then that there wasn't many websites. It was over £100 to register the domain name. It was fairly exclusive back then. And I had a letter back saying, yeah, more than happy to endorse it. Come and see us. So I went to see them on, I had to wait till school holiday. I remember it very well. It was the first week in July, which I think was 1998, and met the owner there. And I was just, the fascination kind of spiraled then, really. And that led to me a year or two later down the line doing a Saturday job there, just helping out. And I was always a bit of an anarchist at school. I never really liked being told what to do. I still don't. Now it's probably because I've been my own boss for so long. And I didn't like being told what to do, got very bored with it. And so I did my GCSEs. I scraped through about 5 or 6 C's or above. And at the same time, I was working the summer as well as that day. I was doing the 6 weeks, 8 weeks, or whatever it was, summer there full time. And they offered me a full time role. So I had the option of going to carry on my education, do my A levels, because I did scrape through, or go into the real world and earn some money. And I took the plunge and did that. So that's how I joined them as a sort of apprentice, really, I guess, if you like, in terms of a scheduling. But the reality is, when you go as a 16-year-old, you're also expected to make the tea and do whatever, really. So sure. That's how the journey started.
And what do you think now for young people? Because that doesn't sound like a route that's so easy to do now, because there aren't the small operators, family operators so much, are there?
Well, I mean, even going back one step, when you're educated, running your own business, which is what I eventually did, I mean, that's not even taught to you. Anyway, you are told to go and get a job. But going for a bus company, I agree. I mean, there's some fantastic organisations out there that do support that. But, the market has shrunk in the SME sector, so it is a lot harder to do. I would struggle now to do what I did back in the late 90s, early 2000s, just because there isn't the scope of operators that that there was back then.
So what advice have you got for young people now? Because it's really tough, isn't it?
It is tough. The first thing, work hard. The harder you work, the luckier you get.
That's true.
And get the message out there. I mean, all it took was, sending a letter, communicating, because actually not many people do that. It's like it sounds obvious, but actually doing something, sending the owner the letter, just the basic stuff, saying, look, I'd love to come and work for you, and just presenting it nice, turning up like nobody else would, so rather than a comment on a social media or an email, actually making that extra effort just to get in front of the people that you want to work with, that would be my advice.
Sure. I mean, I do struggle with this now because there's lots of stuff, but it appears if you haven't got a degree, then your route into admin is actually very difficult. And if you start at a practical level, well, it's not everybody's cup of tea, is it? Firstly, the shifts and the days and the numbers of people who've worked from the shop floor upwards, like Sir Moya Lockhead did, who started, as a apprentice fitter and ended up as chief executive. There's not many of those, is there?
Well, no, and let's be honest, it's not a sexy type of industry, really. You sort of have to have that sort of interest and passion to get into it. But I think sometimes it's about creating the opportunity. There is scope there. I mean, you're right with admin. I think as we see more AI come into businesses, the chance admin requirements are dropping. But good people are hard to find, and when I was running buses, I was always very much looking for those younger people that I could mold, train, take under my wing. Because to be honest, they come with less bad habits, actually. It's just been my interpretation. And I can build them up, and some might be after a few years, they move on to bigger and better things, really. But
Sure.
that's part of it, I think.
Any of your contemporaries rocked up elsewhere? Have you got friends you knew right at the start who are doing exciting things?
To be honest, no, I've had a few people that work with me under my wing later in life that have got, that have got very senior jobs in some organisations. The effectively the within the Big Five. But yeah, my friends that I didn't. I've always been quite introverted, actually. So, and I think with buses, I probably didn't tell my real friends that how keen I was in buses. It just wasn't cool at the time at school, but yeah, definitely people that I've worked with, that I've seen them go on and thrive.
I know. And when you get very old, of course, I mean, I meet people now who are directors in bus companies who are graduate trainees of mine, which is terrifying. One of the most popular episodes on here, David Bowden from Stagecoach, he's commercial director at Stagecoach
Yeah,
East.
I know David. Yeah.
And he fondly remembers being in my graduate trainee group. And it's unbelievable because he's now a director at Stagecoach, which is fabulous.
I mean, one thing I've always done from a young age, and I still do it now, is I will try surround myself with really, really good people,
No, isn't that
two or
right?
three people that are bigger, better, more knowledgeable than me. They motivate me, they inspire me, and I'm a better colleague, employee, business owner as a result of it. So yeah, I remember when I was first started to run buses, it was the second bus I went to buy. I will come on to the bus story later, no doubt. But there's a gentleman called Lynn Watson, who you might be. I don't know
Indeed,
if you know
sir.
Lynn
Indeed,
or not Lynn.
I.
It was unfortunately passed, but and I got he was a chartered accountant, and the amount of knowledge that, and a lot of it, to be honest, was kind of like the basic stuff. But it's just the way it was delivered, and just having that sort of wisdom guidance. I'm still with the same, he was a chartered accountant, I'm still with the same accountancy practice now, 20 odd years later, that Lynn was a partner of.
So Lynn was my first accountant when I started London Pride
Okay, right,
sightseeing
yeah.
in 1984.
It's one of them people, you mention his name and
The world
everybody,
knows. The world knows. And he liked buses more than he liked accountancy, I think, but it was a way for him to be involved. And I can remember, my first year-end review, which was done in licensed premises, as you might imagine. And Lynn was just brilliant, and we very much miss him. But as you say, he touched a lot of people, didn't he?
Yeah, agree with me. But from a very early age, even in my very early first year or two, I realised the importance of surrounding myself with people that are bigger, better than me. I kind of liken it to playing golf with them. I mean, I'm not a keen golfer at all, but if you go and play golf and you're playing golf with somebody that's better than you, you raise your game.
Yeah,
If I go and play golf with somebody that's of a lower standard, then naturally my standard will probably drop slightly. So,
I agree with you entirely, Jeff. My motto was always to surround yourself with good people, because if they do brilliantly, some of that reflects on you. You can't help it, because they're on your team and they do great things, and therefore your team does very well. You learn, they learn, and it is shocking. There are managers, I'm afraid, who don't have clever people around them because they don't want to be eclipsed. But actually, I like these clever people because they make you think, they stretch you a bit, and they've come from they think differently. And some success in business is like having a breadth of talent. It's not, if we were all the same, it would be pointless. So, God, let's move on to central buses then. How did all that happen?
Okay. Well, perhaps I'll just wrap up with my relatively short full time stint at Pete's Travel. So, I joined there full time August 2002. I kind of joined full time though. It was top of the mountain, and they were very quickly coming back down it. So they'd open up multiple depots. That was fascinating. But effectively, there was an ownership issue where the father and son were at loggerheads. The company was running out of money fast, and it was in fairly deep decline very quickly, really. And what I found was my age was a bit of a barrier, or very much a barrier. And I probably went in with a little bit of an ego, but I thought that I could do a lot better job than a lot of these other people there that were making mistakes. But my age was, I wasn't quite getting too involved. And I found myself just very frustrated with it. And I looked at the opportunity of going to college to do website design or something similar, but I'd always wanted to run my own bus company. I remember having that conversation before, and people say, hey, don't be silly, you can't, you're only 16, and then I had a chat with my dad one evening, and he was like, you should go do it. And I'd done my transport managers on the November 20th, I'd just done my transport managers CPC. So I had that, and I was almost, as soon as I got the certificate, I was sort of scratching that itch, really. And long story short, I'd saved a bit of money, £10,000, something like that, over a period of time, borrowed a similar amount from my dad, and applied for my operator's license. Bought a bus from London United, which was a J registered start. I think it was like £9,000 I paid for it. Found a route. And registered. My route was Travel West Midlands National Express, the dominant operator in West Midlands. They were operating every 10 minutes in a suburb into the city centre, Birmingham. So I plumped my one bus in front of theirs. We only had the one, so we had one vehicle versus their six, and started it, and it started very well. So that was, I incorporated it on the 3rd of May 2003, so I was still 16 at the time when I started trading, which was the 15th of September. I was 17, so it was all very surreal, really, to be honest. But yeah, I couldn't drive a car, let alone a bus, and that's how I got going, really.
Amazing.
I think what made it, what was interesting is, because I was young, there wasn't, other than the cash that had been invested, there wasn't much to lose. If I'd have been doing it 5-10 years later, and I've got a mortgage and other commitments, and I'm used to that paycheck coming through day to day, I'm not quite sure of being quite so keen to take the plunge. And what I was also able to do, I mean, I learned from my mistakes. I mean, I could write a book of mistakes that I made in first few years. But we were able to just adapt and grow the business slowly. So my dad was non-exec director, so he didn't get involved in the day-to-day, but I needed him on board because I couldn't open a bank account without him as a director, being under the age of 18. So, I leaned on him for his business experience. I kind of had the bus brand, and I ran it and developed it there gradually over the course of next couple of years. And then over the 15-year period that I was running it, we finished with 31 vehicles until the business was sold.
That's really exciting, isn't it? I mean, for a young person to do that in our industry against, to be fair, against quite a lot of the odds, isn't it? Because, the industry's changing. The technology was growing at such an amazing rate.
Yeah, it was one of those things where I think when you're in it day to day, it didn't necessarily feel exciting.
All right.
So when you take yourself out of it and look back, you think, oh, well, that was an interesting, it was very challenging. Again, my age was, I was up against a lot of challenges because of that in terms of age experience. But yeah, it was very much endurable. Those mistakes that I did make in the early years, learned from it and were able to adapt and build a business from there.
Yeah, of course, of course. And the sort of changes, though, in that period were huge, weren't they? Because fundamentally, the whole industry was changing, especially on the technology, on the fare collection. And what was ridership doing, Jeff, in that sort of time?
It was at its peak at that time, but it was starting to decline slowly. Probably the first few years were fairly strong, but I was adapting, going from different routes, winning tenders. We didn't necessarily have a stable commercial network that we built up in the sort of first couple of years. It was probably 2005, 2006 that you started seeing the decline. There'd always been a very gradual decline, but it started going on a more fierce downward trajectory, really. The aging population, I think, my nan never had a car, but when my mum was getting older, she'd never been on a bus, and that was kind of what it was, the new demographic that was kicking in. High streets were starting to shrink. Mobile phones came out, which aren't mobile phones. You can order, go on Amazon and order your shopping next day. So I think there's so many different challenges that came about. So, and definitely over that course that we saw, patches drop. And I think when I started, there was well over 40 bus operators in the West Midlands. And when I sold the business to Retala in 2018, there was you could count them on two hands.
Yeah,
I
of
think two hands
course.
was probably pushing it.
I know. Well, you always know the high street's in trouble when the charity shop closes and leaves town, don't you?
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
And you know you're in trouble. So you might say you've succeeded because of a bit of luck on timing, or might mean good judgment on timing, but you got into it because you wanted to get into it at the time, and you spotted the moment to leave the operating bit, and possibly that might have been at the top, and you had something else to do on telematics and so on anyway,
Well,
so.
yeah, so I mean, how that came about, what I wanted to do, I built the business up gradually, and what I used to do to supplement my sort of income, it was a bit of a side hobby really, but it actually made quite good money. I used to go to the auctions that took place in Manchester at Bellevue, and I would just go there to be nosy, and sometimes I'd buy one or two vehicles to sell on. I think it might well have been one of the things that I sort of swiped and deployed from Lynn Watson, because Stevenson's always did a bit of trading. I thought, well, I might do, although I was never on the same sort of scale. I'd just do one or two as a little bit of a hobby. If something looked decent, I thought I could make some money on, I'd buy it, put it on eBay, flip it and move on. But there's one vehicle, so this would be in 2006, it was a Mercedes 709, and I got it at a really good price, and I think we just won a tender, and it was at the time when you could still put Mercedes 709s on tenders, so it was probably one of the last ones that you could. And it had in it it was the old flip dot technology for destination displays that didn't work. And I paid, I think, about £1,500 for this bus, but the cost to replace this electronic equipment that didn't work, which with the new LED technology that had only just come out into the market, it was probably double the price I paid for the vehicle. And I remember having a chat with my dad. So my dad's a software engineer by background, and all it is LEDs and some power. It can't be that much. And this was the time where it was a gap in the market where this new electronic equipment had just come out, but people said the old traditional paper blinds, when you had any route changes, it was a nightmare and drivers weren't changing them. So although they're starting to come out on new vehicles, I saw a gap for retrofits, affordable retrofits. Because, cut a long story short, I went out to the Far East, met some established Chinese manufacturers of that, and then I got a prototype developed for my own fleet initially. That I thought, well, actually, let's try retrofitting and just say an issue for this vehicle. I think I probably had six or seven other vehicles at that time, and it worked well. I just kind of go, okay, well, let me just buy a few spare and I'll put an advert in the magazine and see if anybody else wants them. And straight away, the phone started ringing. Probably a little bit too much at the beginning. I mean, it was always a sort of steady side kind of aspect. It's a bit like my vehicle trading, really, where occasionally I had a few vehicles. I also had this, and that's how I got into technology. So it was LEDs was only ever really a sort of 5 6 year project, and we serviced it until we didn't need to service it anymore, really. It had been 2008 where I had a similar requirement for vehicle CCTV. So we had a route in the suburbs of Birmingham. It was quite a the farebox revenue was quite high, but there was a lot of wasn't it was a particularly notorious area for crime and probably fraudulent insurance claims, as we soon found out. So we had an incident where a vehicle we had there was a third party hire car that just put his brakes on, and our vehicle went into the back of it, did about £500 worth of damage, and didn't really think much of it. And then a couple of weeks later, I had a call from insurers and said that we had two people on the vehicle at the time, but a call from insurers saying that they received 26 injury claims. And this was where I think, this will just get thrown out. It's impossible, never happened. And I think we had one or two other sort of similar type of incidents in that year. And it comes to the insurance renewal, and these reserves were on my claims history. And my insurance was just spiking out of control. And so to address it, right, okay, we need CCTV. And it was a very similar procurement exercise back in 2000, it's probably a little bit before 2008, this would have been actually. There wasn't many suppliers, there's one or two established. The technology was fairly poor. We've got a requirement here that we can potentially fix. And so we developed a solution for our own fleet, and then saw an opportunity then to sell that to other vehicles. I would have been, it transpired. It probably got worse before it got better, because we still carried on with this route, still got more claims. And although we had camera footage that would help defend it, you still have that battle where you've got
Oh,
to
sure.
deal with the reserves. But I remember the year later, my insurance went up from something like 4,000 a vehicle to 12,000 a vehicle. And it was probably one of the worst days. I mean, I was able to, I think last minute, we were able to finally turn it where we got the insurance down to about 9,000. It was still a significant number, but it wasn't quite as diabolical as what we were looking at before. It was a really sort of challenging time, but I would have been out of business without CCTV, no doubt. Because I think when you're small, you only need a few claims. Insurance is such a critical, your labour costs, your insurance costs, your fuel—they make up so much of your the core overheads and your running costs of the business that it didn't take much to swing. Any increases were effectively coming straight off the bottom line.
That's extraordinary.
Extraordinary.
And I think about it because you hear this business story from time to time. People worked very hard all year to make a small profit, and then one claim wiped it out overnight. And if the claim didn't wipe it out, next year's premium sure did. And
We would have been out of business without CCTV, for no doubt. And it kind of, the reliance on it ended up not being just insurance, but other things. And we were very much early adopters of it, but then we saw then an opportunity to sell it
of course.
to other people, and I used the Centrad vehicle to do that.
I was in China, two China trips ago. I went to Streamax. And they showed me, I mean, the most incredible CCTV now that can actually not only count passengers, but tell you whether they're male or female, whether they're tourists or commuters or have accessible needs or, I mean, extraordinary software behind what you and I simply remember as a camera.
It's evolved so much over the years, really, where it's, I guess, it's a tool to support fleet operators. So the core elements that we were always required CCTV for, accurate eye evidence in terms of a witness, they're still there. They will always be there. But yeah, it's just using it now to help fleet operators build better fleets and protect their drivers. Not long before I sold, I had fortunately, there was no fatalities, but it's quite a high profile incident where a driver had fallen asleep at the wheel. And it's a good example of today's technology, where after the incident, we did an investigation, and it turned out that he was a computer gamer and he'd been up playing computer games all night. And there's a good example now where if the technology that's available now was available back then in, so this would have been 2017, I think, it would have stopped that incident. I've got no doubts about it, because A, it would have alerted the driver, and B, it would have alerted the back end that, okay, you've got a high risk driver here. So it's just using those systems really to say, the data's there. How can we use more with the data to reduce risk
No, indeed. And look,
and
I there's
prevent
plenty
accidents happening?
indeed. And look, there's industrial action taking place right now on bus and rail, of which the cornerstone is fatigue. And of course it's a thinly disguised proposal for shorter hours and higher pay. And don't get me wrong, I'm not against people getting higher wages. It's just we have to accept that Mrs. Smith only wants to pay £1.50 to travel, so we're caught.
Well,
But
it's also the margins in the industry as well. I mean,
true.
we mentioned the impact insurance premiums. We've got very similar today with fuel,
Indeed, so.
where margins are being eroded, in some cases wiped out because of a, it's like 40% increase in fuel.
But in my experience and yours from your story, it wasn't that the shifts were too long or the rosters were too tough. It was what else was going on in the employee's life. And it could be emotional, it could be medical. It could be any one of a number of things. Your one was computer gaming. And the fatigue is there because the rest of the other 16 hours are not being used other than for memory intensive or physically intensive activities, which in turn means that when you get to work, you're tired. And whilst I wish all our employees higher pay will come from productivity and from growing the market. And anybody that wants to join with me in growing revenue is welcome. But I'm afraid when you look into the detail of what's happening in terms of fatigue, it's lifestyle that's the big one that jumps out, isn't it?
I would agree, yeah. And it's managing those risks, coaching those risks. And I think using the technology as well to support the drivers, it's one thing that I think as an industry, we could always perhaps do a bit better. I was probably guilty of this when I was running my fleet. The challenge with vehicle cameras historically is a driver would only find out if there's been a complaint about him, then he would find out the CCTV would have had a gotcha moment. But when a complaint came in and actually the driver was found, not guilty, I had a very one I remember it very well, where on one of my vehicles where we had a complaint that the driver grabbed a girl, and we watched the camera footage. It never happened, and it was gonna go. This would have probably skyrocketed into the Evening Mail and everything. But what we probably did wrong at that point is we didn't actually tell the driver, oh, by the way, we've had this complaint. We've viewed the camera footage. You've done nothing wrong. Great job. It just kind of we dealt with it internally, but the
Yeah, sure.
drivers would only ever find out the gotcha
Indeed.
moments, and they wouldn't. They would be often oblivious to the times where actually this technology has really supported them. And that's one thing. When I'm speaking to customers, I always try just use some of my experience. In hindsight, I wish I'd have done that better sooner,
No, sure.
and get those good stories out, because support's so important. I mean, I'm working at home today. I won't be doing 5.5 hours behind my desk. I will need to at some point get up and get a drink. And but a lot of the time, we're asking our drivers to sit behind the wheel 5.5 hours. Don't blink. Don't get that drink. It's a difficult job that they're doing, and yes, we're very much advocates of supporting them. A lot of time they're driving vehicles that are worth a lot more than their homes,
Yes, of
and they're in
course.
charge of that,
Yeah, of course.
and it's
And
just looking after them a bit better. I think that's where I'm really
indeed.
keen that we use our technology to help.
And there is a disparity, isn't there, between the pay and conditions of people in the rail industry and in the bus industry. And if you're a bus driver, there aren't many jobs around where you put your ordinary driving license on the line every day. And with no disrespect to anybody who works in rail, but you won't necessarily see a customer all day. You won't necessarily see another motorist all day. And if something were to go wrong, your driving license, which is the key to your general freedom and economic capability, is still yours. Whereas as a bus driver, you make a mistake, and there's a serious incident, which is as a direct result of your mistake, your license is gone. And not just your bus driving license, your car driving license is gone, which makes you economically now much more difficult to get any sort of job. How does that get rewarded? Well, it doesn't get rewarded enough in pay. because that sort of risk, as well as the risk of assault, as well as the, as you say, the 5.5 hours and so on, it is tough. And I'm afraid, as I said already, the only mitigation is we've only got the money the passengers give us. Directly as fares or indirectly as taxpayers is the only money we've got. And when we've paid all those other costs, including energy and insurance and so on, well, this is what we can afford for wages. It's not that we don't value the drivers, but it is just what we can afford, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And it's just, I think, looking after them better and giving them the technology is there to help and support them and giving them the tools. And a lot of this technology is very minimal. It's just amplifying the technology that was already there. So, and using the additional data.
What's the next thing we can look forward to in the technology, Jeff? What have you seen in China
That's a good
recently
question.
that'll
Well, I think we're at a very interesting place now because there's been a lot. You mentioned the likes of the technology that you've seen. We're at a place now where, from a hardware point of view, there's been a lot of significant developments over the last 5 years in particular. But from a hardware point of view, there isn't much on the horizon. So we're at that point now where we've got a little bit of stability from hardware. So it's probably a really good time now for investment where, you're looking at long term, and it won't get obsolete within the next year or two. I think from up the technology will be more platform based. It'll be using AI a lot more to help operators review footage, rather than getting 10 different reports or worse, getting overwhelmed with data, actually just giving those two or three things, asking AI that we've built into our platform, what are the top two, three things I should be looking at this week? Identifying those quick wins, those quick savings, because it's very much the 80-20 rule normally. 80% of your savings are within 20% of your data. It's very much what we've found.
Sure, indeed.
So it's identifying those, focusing those, and bringing drivers on board into this coaching process. So if there are incidents, it can easily be shared with them. They've got access to apps. So if there's been a harsh braking incident and you want to coach the driver, you can very easily do it. So it'd be very much software and on the platform side of things, and just making it very easy to use, very quick to download. The days, they haven't quite gone, and we'll always support customers that do it, but the days of having to wait for a vehicle to come back to download, it's now instant.
Of
If
course.
an accident happened overseas, or when you've got a coach abroad, or if it's 30 minutes from depot, the footage is with you like a minute after the accident.
Indeed so. Yeah, it's
It's
amazing.
very much speed, accuracy, and reliability. It's very much something that we've invested in over the last years. We're doing a 5-year warranty now on our product as standard. We haven't increased our cost for it because we're very much a believer in having high reliable footage that's there when you need it. There's nothing more frustrating than, you had a high profile incident, you go to the vehicle and the evidence that you need is not there. So yeah, very much platform based,
Hey.
insight alert. So if there was any problems with your systems, you know about it straight away.
Well, look, Jeff, this is completely amazing. If people want to find out more from Centrad, which is the UK's leading CCTV and software solutions company, they can find you, I think, at centrad.co.uk, and they can find you and everything that you're doing to make our industry safer, our people safer. And of course, just try and keep a lid on some of those costs, like the insurance ones we talked about. So this is amazing, and good luck in the future, Jeff. I know we'll stay in
Thank you.
contact, of course. I've been talking to Jeff Cross, who is the managing director at Centrad. We've learned lots about how he got to where he is today and how he's dealing with the cutting edge of technology. Lunch with Leon is produced in association with Passenger Transport Magazine. Please go there to Passenger Transport Magazine for all your latest news across the whole public transport industry. Meantime, we'll be back with another episode soon. But to my guest, Jeff Cross, thank you very much.
Thanks, Leon.
Lunch with Leon starred Leon Daniels and Jeff Cross. It is produced in association with Passenger Transport Magazine. Please leave us a review or a rating wherever you get your podcasts from. Another episode soon.